Collins. Peter B. Collins, news and comment. It's Thursday, June 28th, 2018. I don't know about you, but I'm feeling deeply unsettled about America's future. The retirement of Justice Kennedy, the way the Republicans will ram through another young, far-right justice who will be on the court for 30 or 40 years. It is disillusioning and depressing. And when I look at the forces in opposition, I'm sorry, I don't find any hope. And in the current climate, the Democrats, in my opinion, are bungling badly. As you've heard the last few days, I support Maxine Waters, the fiery congresswoman from Los Angeles who happens to be black and who is being attacked by Trump as an extremely low IQ individual, which is a race-baiting kind of dog whistle to his mob of Twitter followers. Maxine Waters didn't call for any violent confrontation. She said, hey, if you find one of Trump's enablers, one of the people who is an apologist or a tool who's being used to advance the ugly agenda of the Trumpers, she said, let them know. Get a group and holler at them. And I do understand that the party leadership is trying to avoid open skirmishes and violence in the streets. And as I sat down to record the podcast, I've just learned about a shooting at a newspaper in Annapolis, Maryland, and I don't know much more about that. But Trump is the guy who has gathered mobs, encouraged them to yell at the media, cheer, lock her up about Hillary. He has openly talked about his desire to punch people in the face or to have one of his loyal followers do it for him. And as I've pointed out, the incivility that America is experiencing is all laid at Trump's feet. And so when his victims pipe up and fight back, we are told to sit down and shut up. Nancy Pelosi, who I've known since the 1980s, I consider her a friend. I admire her personally. But I disagree with her, and I think it's time for her to step down. And I understand that Pelosi is trying to weave a fine line in a very contentious atmosphere. But fundamentally, if we fail to fight the fascism that is creeping in this country today, if we adopt civility, I view that as capitulation. Now, I'm not trying to go mano a mano, tit for tat, but I look at the Palestinians and the way they are repeatedly condescended to and told, just be good, be nice. Then Israel won't send its fighter jets to bomb you in the Gaza Strip. Just accept that Israel has overtaken most of the Palestinian property in the West Bank to build its illegal settlements. Don't rock the boat. Don't poke the bear. And the Democrats have now tried to invoke the Mitch McConnell rule, claiming that since he blocked Merrick Garland's confirmation process during Obama's last year, that the Republicans shouldn't move forward to confirm a replacement for Justice Kennedy this year. And it doesn't hold up under careful scrutiny or real debate. Then there is the call to delay the confirmation until next year, until the voters decide who's going to be in the Senate to confirm the next Supreme Court justice. They've also raised concerns about a conflict of interest for Trump appointing a justice who may have to turn around and recuse him or herself from an appeal that Trump might bring from the work of the Mueller investigation. That's a serious issue. But none of this will faze the opportunist Republicans. They are so cynical. They march in lockstep in fear of their Führer. And so I have a real sense of dread, disillusionment about how our system works and how it is failing us today. And one of the problems in what I just advocated, I want to acknowledge the difficulties here. If we take Maxine Waters' advice, it is misinterpreted intentionally by Trump and his allies. Here's a press release that was emailed me this morning, offering me the opportunity to interview Julio Rivera, the editorial director for ReactionaryTimes.com. And the headline reads, Summer of Unrest, Shock Poll, 44% See Civil War Soon, Video, Dems and Media Figures Glorify Violence Against Supporters, Poll, 59% Fear Violence from Trump Haters. They are openly stoking the prospect of street combat. They want it. It appeals to their authoritarian instincts. They relish a fight. They think that the pansies on the left can be dispatched in short order. And they have a righteous sense of their own political correctness that doesn't acknowledge any other point of view. And today in my San Francisco Chronicle, Joe Garofoli, the political writer, interviewed Heidi Hess. She's the co-director of Credo Action. That's the phone company with politics. And she was one of the people who led the activists outside Kirstjen Nielsen's home in Virginia, where they played the tape of the crying toddler who was held in detention and couldn't find her mommy. And Hess calls Nielsen a collaborator with Trump. She says complicity has a consequence. And she believes that keep quiet is a tone-deaf message to send in a week when 28-year-old Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez shocked the fourth-ranking House Democrat and defeated Joe Crowley in the New York primary this Tuesday. Hess goes on, when we articulate our clear and powerful values, we really don't get anywhere by imagining that people are going to come around because we're nice, that we're real milquetoast on stuff that they care about. And later, Hess says that the comments from people like David Axelrod and Chuck Schumer, who are saying that the protesters are out of line and that denying people a meal, even Bernie Sanders says you shouldn't hustle somebody out of a restaurant. Well, Hess says, that's just playing into the Republicans' hands with this respectability frame that only serves Republicans and doesn't serve progressive values at all. Democrats who do that are sending a message that their access to power and respectability, business as usual in Washington, is more important than what is happening in the grassroots. You can support Credo Mobile if that is a view that resonates with you. And speaking of Ocasio-Cortez, she's gently pushing back on Nancy Pelosi's statement that, well, you know, that was just one district. They made a choice there. She said, let's not get carried away. We have an array of genders, generations, geography, and the rest, opinion, in our caucus, and we're very proud of that. So Pelosi is batting down the socialist Democrat angle. She is afraid that the party will be tagged. Now, it already is. Rush Limbaugh repeatedly refers to all liberals as a monolithic group that is defined by the leftist of the left. And we all know that's bullshit, but it doesn't stop the right from tagging us in that manner. And so as long as we're going to bear the brunt and carry the label, I believe we should stand up for ourselves and not be cowed by Trump or those who support him. And Ocasio-Cortez said, I think we're in the middle of a movement. I feel this movement. The movement is going to happen from the bottom up. It's going to come from voters. There are really a lot of exciting races with extremely similar dynamics as mine. It's not just one district. And then we hear from Aaron Burnett of CNN. Is it going to stay that way? Is it time for new blood? Ocasio-Cortez. I think we do need to elect a generation of new people to Congress in both parties. Some of the issues that we even have today may have to do with some of the calcified structures and relationships. And as I've said, I've known Nancy Pelosi for a long time. I'm proud that she became Speaker. But her time has passed. And she needs to recognize that. And as Lee Fung points out at The Intercept today, the people who are most upset about Joe Crowley's loss are a gaggle of lobbyists. Here's Republican lobbyist John Feary. Joe Crowley's a great guy to have a pint of Guinness with. For me personally, it's losing a mentor and a best friend. Mervyn Jones, a former Crowley staffer, now lobbyist for Anheuser-Busch InBev. All my best to the Crowley staff, he tweeted. And then Mark Penn, Democratic strategist who ran Hillary's losing campaign in 2008, also worked for Bill Clinton back in the day. Responding to the victory by Ocasio-Cortez, I just don't think that's where the Democratic Party is going. I think that's where the district is going. The national implications are being overblown. Now, to some extent, that's true. But there is deep denial among the Democratic leadership about their vulnerabilities, and about how out of touch they are with the activist base of the Democratic Party. And the tone-deaf passage by the DNC of the Block Bernie rule just recently speaks volumes about that. And Trump himself is stoking this idea of armed combat on the streets between his mob and the resistance. And he continues to attack Maxine Waters. Can you imagine if I said the thing she said? Come on. Trump has said far worse things. And everybody knows it. But this crowd in Fargo last night cheered him on. He continued, please keep Maxine Waters on the air as your face and your mouthpiece for the Democrats. Radical Democrat protesters, they really want anarchy. But the only response they will find from our government is very strong law and order. Yes, the stern father stands up to these petulant children who hold to these discredited liberal ideas and just can't get on board the Trump train. As I alluded to earlier, with this Supreme Court nomination and confirmation battle coming up, we have 10 Democratic senators who face re-election in November in states that Trump won. They are weak-kneed, lily-livered cowards. And he singled out Heidi Heitkamp since he was in North Dakota last night, and he tweaked her a little bit. But we've also got the limp-wristed people like Joe Donnelly in Indiana, Joe Manchin of West Virginia. Along with Heitkamp, they voted to confirm Neil Gorsuch to the Supreme Court last year. And you know they're willing to cave again if they think they can save their own hides. And they think that. But Trump is relentless. And they are trying to walk a tightrope that he can jiggle with his Twitter feed at will. And so the twin arguments of the Democrats are you can't appoint a Supreme Court justice during an election year. And Mitch McConnell responded, hey, look, it was 2016, the end of an eight-year reign. The president was lame duck. And his rationales belie his opportunism and ruthless use of parliamentary rules. And the other issue is that I referenced is the Mueller probe could produce appeals to the Supreme Court and Trump nominees, including Gorsuch, would be expected to recuse themselves. But if Clarence Thomas is any example, that is not a certainty, not at all. Now to look at the short list of Trump nominees for the open position on the Supreme Court. And it includes Brett Kavanaugh, who's a darling of establishment Republicans, Tom Hardiman, who was on the short list when Gorsuch was named last year. And one of my favorites is William H. Pryor, the slimy guy from Alabama who sits on the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals. And if you follow this podcast, you know that Roger Shuler courageously published a photo of Bill Pryor, fully nude, including his penis, that was published in a gay dating magazine or online publication some years ago. And there are quite a lot of rumors swirling in the cesspools of Alabama about who Bill Pryor has been involved with. And because I'm a principled guy, I'm not going to repeat them because I can't prove them. But he could set up a new kind of Roy Moore case where he is so badly exposed and discredited that it could be a very rough ride for the Republican confirmation process. But he's one of about 10 people on the list, so I don't want to get too far down the road before Trump reveals his play. And I want to recommend to you a piece by court watcher Ian Millhiser. He emailed me yesterday. He writes for Think Progress. And he wrote a piece, "Here's the Nasty Unflinching Send-Off that Justice Kennedy Deserves." And he says, "Kennedy was a Cadillac's intellect in a Lamborghini's job. His writing ranged from needlessly flowery to completely incoherent. And while his views sometimes placed him to the left of men like Scalia and Bork, his liberal opinions were frequently his most incomprehensible." Well, he goes on for 14 pages. And if you're game, I've linked to it in the show file for today's podcast, so you can check it out. Every day I pause for a second to thank the people who support my work with your subscriptions to the Peter B. Collins podcast. Great people like, oh, let me turn the page here. Lorna Garano just took out a new annual subscription. Thank you, Lorna. Joey Perillo, Wendy Gebauer, and the fine folks at DigitalOcean. I appreciate your support for the Peter B. Collins podcast, and I invite others to join in. And we've got the new sweetener for you. If you take out a new annual subscription for $50 and give me a mailing address in the continental U.S., I will ship you pronto a copy of John Dist's exciting new rock and roll CD called American University. You should check it out. Well, it's interesting because I didn't really know this until the Washington Post reported it today, but there are two distinct divisions of ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, which is under the umbrella of the Department of Homeland Security, all salute. And the majority of the leaders of the Criminal Investigation Division, which is called ICE's Homeland Security Investigative Division, or HSI, they have written a letter asking to be split from the what are called enforcement and removal operations, which is what ICE is best known for. And these agents say that the backlash from rounding up immigrants and deporting them is interfering with their law enforcement duties on human trafficking, counterterrorism, and narcotics enforcement. And they freely admit here that the sanctuary jurisdictions, California and many others, have made life very difficult for them. That's an admission that I'm happy to see. So they write that it's increasingly difficult for HSI agents to fight drug cartels and conduct major criminal investigations. The perception of HSI's investigation independence is unnecessarily impacted by the political nature of ERO's civil immigration enforcement. Well, fight on. Let's see where that goes. Maybe you heard earlier this year when Trump attacked the mayor of Oakland, Libby Schaaf, claiming that she had alerted undocumented people to an upcoming ICE raid, and that Trump said hundreds of people, and he implied that most of them are dangerous felons, got the word and went underground. And one of the principled people who surfaced after that episode was the Bay Area spokesperson for ICE, James Schwab. And Schwab quit after he was asked to lie. He said that he wouldn't do that. He does support the mission of the agency. But it's interesting, he was being interviewed on camera at his home by CBS News when two agents from ICE showed up at his door. He was not expecting them. "Oh, they just said they wanted to talk to me about the leak with the Oakland mayor," Schwab said. So they are continuing to harass him, showing up unexpected, unannounced, uninvited at his home. And Schwab is a bit of a hero because he exposed that the goal of this raid was to round up about 200 people. And he told CBS, "We ended up arresting 232, 16% higher than our highest estimates. But then I was told to lie because Jeff Sessions said that ICE failed to make 800 arrests because of the mayor's statement. It was completely false. That made me extremely uncomfortable," he said. "And they failed to correct it. It's a flat-out lie." And that's why he quit. Good for you, Mr. Schwab. While the Supreme Court used willful blindness to ignore Trump's bigoted statements about immigrants and Muslims in particular, in its landmark ruling upholding the questionable travel ban 3.0 that Trump issued in September of 2017. There is a new case related to a different subset of immigrants, people who were granted what was called temporary protected status. This typically occurred after revolutions, hurricanes, or other events that displaced large numbers of people. And many of these people came from the countries that Trump has called shithole countries. And the court case is before a federal judge named Edward Chen, who has refused to dismiss it despite the government's demands. And this lawsuit is one of five challenges to the temporary protected status across the country. It alleges that the decisions to terminate were motivated not by purported improvements in conditions on the ground, but by racial prejudice on the part of the president. Now, it's likely that this will wind its way to the Supreme Court at some point. And will they be as willfully blind then? I'm afraid I would predict the answer is yes. Well, it's been pretty ugly in Sacramento the last couple of days. The California legislature today unanimously approved a bill that was watered down intentionally. And the bill relates to the right of individuals to control their data and block it from being exploited by Facebook, Google, or even perhaps commercially the U.S. government. And I think it's an important bill of rights to protect our privacy, to allow us to control our information, to allow us to sue those who abuse it. And it's the brainchild of a San Francisco rich guy named Alistair McTaggart. And he put up about $3 million to qualify a very strong data control bill that he had headed for the ballot in November. He collected enough signatures, it qualified, and today was the deadline for him to withdraw that from the ballot. And he did so after the legislature unanimously approved this bill. And as I said, it's much weaker than the initiative that it supplants. We're told that Governor Brown is going to sign it today. And that is the deal that allows the tech companies to dictate what terms they will agree to regarding our data. And this is another shameful episode in California political history. And I have a lot of respect for a lot of things that Jerry Brown has done. But he is all too willing to crater to the demands of industries, whether it's the electric utilities, the frackers, the oil companies, the polluters. And next up, he has been getting cozy with the sugary soda industry. And there is a bill that would preempt local sales taxes, or at least any new ones, across the state. And the cynic in me predicts that the soda tax preemption bill will pass, and that Jerry Brown will sign it. And I don't know if he'll wash that down with Coke or Pepsi. but that's likely how it's going to play out. Over at World Socialist website, they're reporting that on May 23rd, there was a secret meeting at Facebook's Menlo Park headquarters attended by representatives from Amazon, Apple, Google, Microsoft, Snap, Twitter, and Oath, the company that now owns Yahoo. And they met there with agents of the FBI and our good friends at the Department of Homeland Security. What for? Well, it's all about developing closer ties to law enforcement. The report says the real target of the censorship campaign that is aimed at fake news is popular access to left-wing news sources not controlled by the corporate media, like the PBC podcast and the World Socialist website. And speaking of Facebook, I am really irritated because since the Kennedy retirement announcement, the Hillary or die people have been relentless and mean and deeply misinformed. Here's one from my Facebook friend Carol. Let's see. Unions crippled, Muslims banned from entering the country, abortion rights weakened, discrimination against gays and lesbians sanctioned, and that was just in the past week. To all you progressives who swore there was no difference between Trump and Hillary and either didn't vote or voted for Jill Stein, thank you. And here's one more from my friend Mimi. We are screwed. Thanks to the Bernie bros who voted for that third party. How is this working for you now? The repercussions on this will last for decades. There is so much that is wrong about these statements. First of all, get over it. Hillary lost because she failed to contest the rigging of the election by Republicans, from Chris Kobach and the cross-check list to the free media that was given to Donald Trump. Not to mention that she was an establishment candidate in a change election cycle, and the superdelegates knew her vulnerabilities when they hustled her over the line, denying Sanders the nomination and choosing Clinton instead. And I know they don't believe anything that I just told you. They are locked into the mythology of Hillary's entitlement to be the first female president, and nothing else matters. They never even stopped to think how it was so close that you could blame Jill Stein for a few thousand votes in Michigan when Hillary Clinton's lawyers would not even contest the discovery of 75,000 ballots in Michigan where people voted but showed no vote for president. In Detroit. That is election fraud, or at least it screams out to be investigated as election fraud. Oh, and over at the Washington Post, Philip Bump notes that as of this writing, 2 years and 2 weeks have passed since the Post first reported that hackers linked to the Russian government had accessed the Democratic National Committee's network and stolen documents. That remains an unproven assertion. Barrels of ink, zillions of pixels have been spilled and burned, based on leaks, anonymous sources, and a narrative that has never had any public proof. And the Washington Post toils away. This is written by Philip Bump under the headline, "A Broad Debunking of Trump's Claims About Russian Interference in the Mueller Investigation." And if you drill down into it, they repeat all of the usual stuff. They ignore any challenges to the narrative, including those presented by Ray McGovern, Bill Binney, Julian Assange, and Craig Murray, that I'll get to here in just a second. But here's an interesting admission late in this article. Quote, "It may be the case that there was no incident in which Trump or his senior campaign team specifically coordinated with Russian actors to guide their interference in the 2016 race. In fact, that is probably the safest default assumption." So, to Julian Assange, today I got a hold of the original report that was posted at The Hill by a guy named Solomon, John Solomon, and it reads, "In the spring of 2017, one of Assange's lawyers, Adam Waldman, negotiated with the Justice Department on a possible deal to get the WikiLeaks founder limited immunity and safe passage out of the London embassy. In return, Assange would provide technical information to the U.S. ruling out certain suspects in the release of hacked DNC emails to the Russia case, identifying vulnerabilities in the CIA's computer systems, and talk about measures to protect certain sensitive information, including identities, in future releases by WikiLeaks. Mr. Assange, in the text of the agreement, quote, is also prepared to discuss, turn the page, a description of CIA information in the possession or control of WikiLeaks, the risks of third parties who may have obtained access to such information, and that they would reiterate what Assange and Murray have told us, that while WikiLeaks has the policy of never naming its sources or revealing how the information was delivered to it, that they were willing to rule out Russia as the source of the DNC information. And Craig Murray has been so explicit. He went to Washington, he met with a guy who had legal access to the information and gave it to him because he was pissed at the DNC for the way they burned Bernie Sanders. None of this gets mentioned by the Washington Post. None of it is part of the telenovela of Rachel Maddow's nightly narrative. And so it goes. World Socialist website, and a hat tip to Carl Howard for linking me to this, they also report that 10 Democratic senators have written a letter to the president of Ecuador urging him to end the protection and boot Julian Assange out of the London embassy. Bob Menendez, the slimy senator from New Jersey, Dick Durbin, Richard Blumenthal, Ed Markey, Michael Bennett, Christopher Coons, Joe Manchin, Gene Shaheen, Dianne Feinstein, and Mark Warner all signed on to that letter. And meanwhile, Rod Rosenstein is dueling with the hardline Freedom Caucus Republicans in the House, who passed a measure with 226 votes today demanding that the Justice Department release information from the Mueller probe, and they have until July 6 to do it. It's pretty ugly there. And many suspect that the Republicans want to sink the investigation by handling or mishandling this information. And finally today, yellow journalism from Vice News. Their headline reads, Putin's cook is trolling the Mueller investigation in court. They write about Yevgeny Prigozhin. He's known as Putin's cook. He was allegedly running the internet research agency that was indicted by Mueller. He's one of the people who was named in those indictments. And he's fighting. He's fighting in court in Washington with some high-priced American lawyers. And this bemuses Vice News in this biased report. They open, rather than simply ignore the charges announced in February, a Russian company controlled by Prigozhin hired a team of Washington lawyers and met Mueller's prosecutors in court. It's stunning. The media is so consumed with what it says it knows, the consensus view, Russia meddled in the election. The Internet Research Agency was critical in all that fake news that caused Americans to be duped into voting for Trump. It is such utter and complete bullshit. And on that note, I will exit stage left. Thanks for listening. I'm Peter B. Collins.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling